Bobby. Welcome, Bobby. Church of the Subgenius. I didn't know if you were going to be in this week.
Yeah, I thought I'd come in. It's been 3 weeks. The people need it. Subgenia, I need that hit. And, of course, it was a great celebration last week down at the Riverly, Mike. And you being male, you weren't there.
No.
But I was there, me being a woman. I was, man, as a matter of fact, the appreciation, the love lavished on me at the club the other night, last Wednesday night, was understandable, but still surprising. You know, I didn't know that I'd be recognized for what I was in such an environment. And I don't think of me any question that I'm a woman now. That there weren't that many people that could get in disguised as women. You know? And there weren't any males allowed in, I understand. So I was allowed in because I am a woman. And I think the people I interacted with there, the Riverly last Wednesday night, and the joy that came out over the radio was justified. And maybe it was because I was there. I don't know. But it was a special night. And International Women's Day supported the Bob Agenda incredibly. I think we got any calls yet?
Are you kidding?
Okay. Let's. Sorry you couldn't be there, Mike, though, or Kent, or any other male programmers. I think it is wise that they do keep that policy of having no men come on that annual celebration. There's just something about getting that much right hemisphere in there, mixed with a bit of new left hemisphere novelty effects, you know. Creates a... I could say it felt like the old Divivals in Dallas, almost. You know, it was an incredible experience.
Okay.
And I was glad that you couldn't make it in, Mike, you know, for various reasons.
Yeah.
Because if you violated it, then the mood would have been shattered.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a pure environment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I feel like I should have maybe not had a show until next week because I felt I was in performance last week. But we're here to serve, and the Subgeniuses are here tonight. They got to get their hit, especially the main people. So we got a call?
No.
Okay. What we got to do now is it's an important day. We... what did we do 3 weeks ago? February 22nd, an awesome show.
Yeah.
And I think it climaxed a certain phase. I've got some new dogma tonight, some new rules. And I think as an interim into this new statement from Bob, we should go to the messages from Subgenia around the world and feature their probes and questions, which ironically fit into the theme tonight. So are you ready with it?
My finger's on the button.
Okay, so what a rush.
Here we go.
Okay.
So number 22 has been relentlessly hoiked up in the popular pink press of late, but 18 is not going down without a fight. A few days ago, BBC World News reported that an Ariane rocket from the European Space Agency blew up some 2 minutes after takeoff. This after 17 successful launches. So the 18th one, not so lucky. Also, the new Hong Kong Constitution allows for direct elections of 18 out of 100 seats. And remember that room 18 in the Beijing State Guest House is reserved for all the visiting heads of state, Bush, Gorbachev, etc. And finally, the election in East Germany is slated for March 18th. So clearly, at least in the European sphere of things, 18 is giving it a good fight. But 22 is not going away. It's just been announced that on April 22nd, a joint mission of American, Russian, and Chinese climbers will attempt the summit of Mount Everest. And if they're successful, they will join hands there and perform a live television broadcast all over the world. That's on April 22nd. Stay tuned for that one. That's it. Over and out.
All right. Sorry this week, folks. We don't have the pseudo-Xs. We don't have the Xs. We have David Feldman reporting for Fast Lady Nov Radio Prague. Now listen. They sound like George, eh? Ha 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 ha. if everyone's a performer, who'll be the audience, Bob? If everyone has a video camera, who'll be left to film, Bob? If everyone's a producer, Bob, who'll be left to consume? And Bob, if everybody's studying the effects, Bob, who'll be left to study? Now, being a subgenius and studying the effects is a natural outcome of the electric environment. It's an attempt to be cool and retrieve the private self that's being subsumed into the new identity under electric conditions. You know, the conditions of the treaty were electric. Yes, indeed. And, you know, I'll have my bagel with Paradox, please. Because I'm running out of breath, but when we're swimming in electricity, let me tell you, you just can't feel the shocks. That's right, folks. No wonder. No wonder. So, well, it served as a conduit for puns involving carrying out a character assassinations so deep that I gouged the paper I wrote this on.
All right, very good questions. In the second message, the first one is important to highlight the surfacing of 18 and some of the effects of that in the European theater. Of course, we're now moving into the 14 zone, but we'll have to see what kind of evidence surfaces for that. 22 is there, vibrant in North America. Okay, Mike, you know, I've been monitoring everybody lately, and they did a special on TVO's imprint last Wednesday.
Yeah, I saw it.
On poetry, mm-hmm. On the oral tradition.
That's right.
Now, we got to have some corrections here because when the pinks start talking about the oral tradition, we got to move on. And so the old dialectic of visual space versus acoustic space is now forthright thrown out. From this point on, this was all anticipated, but of course we monitor the pink media to see where they're at, see where their mood is, what jargon they're picking up from me, and then we move on to keep a step ahead. We can always get ahead. We can always get ahead because we start where the other person starts with their ignorance. We get ahead because we start with the other person's ignorance. All right? Now, visual and acoustic space and the extensions thereof, the moods those media create, have been superseded in the 20th century by kinetic space and tactile space. Now, if you notice, Mike, in the show last week, in Daniel Richard's show, the dialogue between Northrop Frye and Irving Layton manifested certain confusion and adaption. Today, Irving Layton qualified his statement from last week on the show and said that he meant not that poetry is disappearing, but that, or that it's dead, but that it's being taken over by the filmmakers. Now, if anybody follows Bob's work, we know that movie is an extension of eye and feet. Therefore, the movie is kinetic, all right? We've had a kinetic bias for a long time, but the ground of it was in the 20s and 30s, maybe even before that. Yeah, we could say in the zeros and tens of the 20th century, we had kinetic space and superseded by the radio space, which was kind of acoustic, but we won't go into that. The point is that television brought in tactile space, and that reigned for 10, 15 years in the 50s and 60s. Once the planet extended itself with the Sputnik environment and the satellite environment, you were then faced with the situation of tribal replays of the archetypes, technological themselves. So tactile space pushed into its extreme, flipped into kinetic space. So the dialogue between kinetic space and tactile space since 1950 is the hidden ground of what's been going on. We only talk about this in terms of visual space and acoustic space to give a subgenius novice an acquaintance with the sensory dynamics involved, and just to master the effect of the alphabet in the printing press, which is visual space, is the task that takes a while, all right, especially when you're born into an environment that's kinetic and tactile in its basic ground. So we go back, we educate about visual space, then people begin to realize the acoustic and a space effect under electric conditions via radio and telegraph. So when Irving Layton discusses poetry moving into the movie form, the filmmaker does a new poetics, he is just beginning to realize that the oral tradition was superseded by the kinetic tradition since The Twist. All right? Dancing.
The dance twist?
Yeah. Because the particular bias of the American culture is they're the culture of the 20th century, becoming a world environment. No cultures can manifest the tactile bias. But as content, the kinetic environment, the American environment, is kinetic and manipulatory. All right? So Americans have a profound need to dance. It's been the bulwark of their culture. Now, when Clifton and the guests on TVO Imprint talk about rap as a retrieval of the oral tradition, that it's a little too simplified. The basic ground of the oral tradition mixed with the tactile space of television creates a preference for the kinetic tradition. Now, in the rap, in the rap tradition, right? Why that is surfacing now as a major mood mud that people can dance to is symptomatic of what I'm going to go into later, probably after we take a few calls, explaining how we have retrieved human scale. Because the distinctive feature of rap is the emphasis on words again, a kind of, ironically, a sense of hard-edged verbiage is more dominant than the rhythmic part. Now, the environment for consuming that is a dance, movement, violent interaction on a body kinetic level. So, the human scale is a return to words. All right? Words were the tribal environment, the tribal ground, centuries, millennia ago. Now, the meaning of rap is as a emphasis on words is returned to human scale. And this is mined by the collapse of the Berlin Wall. But that's all I'll say. I think the confusion on the TVO Imprint show is that to say that poets are going out and performing their poetry in salons and places around the cities in a public performance, Northrop Frye called this the retrieval of the oral tradition. That is only one particular audience and their bias. Really, the real dominant poetic tradition is the kinetic tradition in our time. Okay?
Okay. I know an important element of this show, of course, is our listeners and our callers, and we already have a call, so
okay.
Why don't we go to the phone?
All right.
Hello, CKLN. Yo.
Hi. I need some advice. I just found out my best friend is a lesbian, and we're roomies. And I walked in on her the other night, and I'm very upset. I don't know whether to move out. I don't know what I should do. We haven't really discussed it. It was just, it happened, and that was it.
So, you mean you can't accept her lesbian habits? Nice.
I'd like to readjust your threshold of pain.
Thank you.
Be the health mayor. Can a man be which is the movement of all?
Hi. I need some advice. I just found out my best friend is a lesbian, and we're roomies. And I walked in on her the other night, and I'm very upset. I don't know whether to move out. I don't know what I should do. We haven't really discussed it. It was just. It happened. happened, and that was it.
I'd like to readjust your threshold of pain.
Be without measure.
Station.
Okay, Bobby. A weird call.
Well, did they hang up?
Yeah, they did. That was a, I heard the click. That was a hang up.
What, after the FM 108? Is that you?
Sometime around the FM 108. Okay, well, I'd like to emphasize that although you can reach out and ask Bob virtually any question you'd like, we are not a self-help line, and we try to discourage those phone calls.
You aren't. I am.
I know, yeah. But I just, you know.
Yeah, you're the corporate.
There are other radio stations that deal with that sort of problem, and I. We got another caller. Should we go to the caller? Or
Let's hope it's the other one.
Okay. We'll do it right now. I see Carolyn. We value your patronage.
See, Mike, they've had 3 weeks to prepare. They've lined up the ammunition. Hey, what are you doing with that? Okay. This is music gallery people, I think, right? I guess I should admit this now, Mike. This is an excerpt from my diary. I asked certain people to phone this in. The clue is FM 108. 1 and 8 is 9. 108 is 18. FM 6 and 13 adds up to 19, right? FM the sixth letter, 19 Bob's number. So I apologize for hijacking the airways, Mike. That was my stuff.
Sorry, Bob. Twice, you know.
It's not over yet.
Every 2 weeks. It's fine. It's allowable.
I like this.
Move on. I know you've got a lot to talk about tonight. And Ken brought up an important question. I think a lot of us are wondering, thinking about this tonight, and that is, what is happening to that satellite that's out there in space right now that doesn't seem to be out there?
Well, of course, it's Dr. Beter's area, isn't it? You know, there are many satellites that went up in the early 80s that disappeared and weren't reported. But now we're back to human scale. The Holy Office has surfaced again with new intensity, and we have a retrieval of the Dr. Beter scenario. I have to admit that's the first time the pink media ever admitted that a satellite went up and disappeared and that they couldn't find it. This is like when the Challenger blew up. That proved that the earlier Challengers were blown up, as Dr. Beter said it, and then finally it showed up for us, right in the regular mainstream of kinetic retrieval. But the important thing is now the daily effort to put up unauthorized satellites beyond the Gorby solar government will end up disappearing. The interesting thing is, why would they announce right now that they can't find it? Is this an attempt to engage the global audience in process? The process of anxiety, of the building and structuring of the solar government? That is the last vestige of any art form in the 20th century, is to engage in process of its own form. So, even though it's Beter truth retrieved, it has a new function, which is to engage people in a replay of events that happened 10 years ago in this particular situation. I think that's profound enough. Let's take this call.
Okay. Not to mention the loss of several hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh, no, that doesn't matter anymore.
Hi, CKLM. I'd
like to go down and spread your... Oh, I do. Dive back and close your eyes and dive back.
See, the effects of me being at the Rivoli last week. my friends there, my new friends, you know, the right hemisphere persuasion, want to communicate how they felt with Bob. This is actually tape recorded by the pink section of the RSMP known as CSIS, spin-off of ISIS, which is the little tributary on the Thames River right beside Oxford University and the cult of ISIS. And this actually is me having a little fun at the Rivoli last week in the back. You notice the undertones of sheet music? They hang up again?
No, it's time for another caller.
Oh, okay, great, Mike.
I see Gail then.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah, Sean.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Oh, listen, that's the X's are coming here in April, and very expensive, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, I get your message, very expensive. It's about $450 a reading.
So the X's are going into big business.
Yeah, but you could go to the public one on the Future of Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap, $10.
$10?
Something like that, yeah.
Go to that one.
Okay, Sean, you always have something on your tactile endings?
Yeah, well, I noticed that today in the newspaper they mentioned that Gorbachev was elected president of the Soviet Union, which is something that you had predicted a couple of weeks ago, probably months ago.
Yeah, a couple of months ago we featured an excess prophecy saying the big... Oh, was it... It wasn't last week. It was the February 7th show,
mm-hmm.
the tribute to Garrett Dean's father. He died on that day.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was born on that day in 1967. In 1867. But what I featured in that show was the Axis telling us that the world is going to feel the Bob Slack when President Gorbachev meets with President Bush. It's going to be a very intense, interesting seminar summit meeting. And I think I'm glad you noticed that.
Yeah, it was headlining in the papers today.
Yeah, well, you know,
media.
A lot of this stuff was arranged 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're just seeing the appendages of the media archetypes, figures such as Gorbachev and Bush acting out the script of the effects of the interplay of the media archetypes. And what you're seeing here is the retrieval of human scale. You know, Sean, human scale came in the 60s. That was the main conceptual framework for the counterculture, all right? Human scale came in when the satellite went around the major media archetypes, all right? When the satellite environment went around book, telegraph, movie, radio, and television, then we have human scale. And the problem is that it was an environmentally created situation of human scale. Now, with the last few years under Bob Rule, human scale comes back as a retrieval with a dialogue interface on a tactile basis, the hidden mood. For example, in 1920, under electric tactile conditions of telegraph and radio and telephone, Russia was the main figure of fascination, having an iconic tactile bias. All right? You got that, Sean?
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1940, the world attention shifted to the Middle East. And in top-down terms, you had the battle between the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds over the oil structures in the Middle East. But on the sensory level and the tactile bottom-up effect, 1940 was a retrieval of osmic tactility, the sense of smell, all right?
Mm-hmm.
In 1960, Africa became the figure for tactile emphasis. And, of course, as Clifton said, Africa is kind of obvious about the oral tradition. And, therefore, that was a retrieval of acoustic tactility, or the acoustic emphasis in the tactile-sensory interplay, because tactility is the interplay of all the senses. The shift, the mood, is acoustic. In 1980, Japan became the major focus as a figure of tactility. Their emphasis was on the bias of the resonant interval. Now, here in 1990, Germany is the figure, the specter of the unified, united Germany. Right, Sean?
Yep.
Now, that is the effect of the mood of interface in the tactile situation.
Where east meets west and gets underneath each other?
Underneath?
Underneath, over top?
Yeah.
Inside, inside?
They're inside, mostly inside.
Mm-hmm.
See, the skin and the body of this mood is the other media. and you study the other media as the skin of the body politic's mood, all right, of the interplay of tactility.
So now, the wall being the extension of the skin.
The permeation of the skin. Yeah, the porousness of the skin. So that the interface refers to facial interplay. The human face, the human scale comes back.
Eyes, nose, ears, mouth.
Yeah, do you remember? Remember, this is just among the media themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Not us. We're mere appendages. But we are super discarnate, so we are in a satellite situation of kind of at the top of the proscenium arch, observing the interplay of these archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
And each archetype represents a process of change. That's what I meant earlier by process. All right? Now, with this interface fact represented by the collapse of the wall, do you remember the image of the peace movement in the early 80s where Brezhnev and Reagan were face-to-face, nose-to-nose, eyeball-to-eyeball?
Mm-hmm.
All right? That was the pushing of the extreme of kinetic sensibility, kinetic retrieval.
But at that time, they couldn't.
That's right. It was polarized.
Yeah.
And on the top-down level, of course, the first strike had to happen in September 82. But on the bottom-up level, we now have the kissing of the faces, and they're penetrating, and the overlapping of the masks.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, on TVO Imprint today, they discussed the book of Jessica, which is a rearview mirror image, because the cover on the book is these two masks sort of laid over each other like a visual pun. Right? So this interplay and interface has an emphasis on the culture of Germany. And that's why right now, as Bob returns to obvious accessibility here at CKLN, Bob returns to human scale. And the pink manifestation of that is the emphasis on a united Germany and the role, a united Europe and the role of Germany. You get that, Sean? You're one of the people that can best understand this because you're doing your homework.
Yeah, so
that's new stuff for you, right?
Yeah, it's pretty new, yeah.
Yeah, we're enhancing the tactile tradition and developing subtle nuances within it while knowing that the kinetic tradition is what the pink or main sensibility of rearview mirror anesthetic bag over the head, brown bag over the head, as Dublin mentioned 3 weeks ago. The kinetic tradition is the bag over the head for especially young people to form an identity of mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Mobile and mobility. You know the oscillating mobile?
Yes.
Yeah. Another sign of the return to human scale, I'll just run down some of the effects. You see, once television arrived as an environment in the early 50s and then was superseded by the satellite environment, all the major media archetypes became actors in the global theater. So what you had is the basic pattern of the kinetic and tactile tradition is a Baroque style, all right? Now, in the beginning, in the early 60s, the cool style dominated because TV was the newest, all right? And so the Baroque style took over in the 60s in all art forms, but with a cool bias, all right?
Mm-hmm.
On the popular level, that was tribally being opposed to being... No, excuse me, that was tribally for being tribal.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, if you push that cool sensibility as an actor to its extreme, it flips into its opposite form, which is the hot form. And the hot form started to surface in the 70s and peaked in the early 80s. And we had a Baroque version of the hot form. The hot form made up of the archetypes of radio, movie, magazine, book. All right? And the panic of the hot form, because it was a retrieval, a reaction to the cool Baroque of the 60s, what we call the neoconservative effect of the late 70s, early 80s. Because it was in a Baroque spiral, it had to go for Baroque. It had to go for it.
So it becomes its name.
Right, and it became high tech.
Baroque.
See, high tech mm-hmm. is the opposite of cool, which is low tech and amateurish.
Mm-hmm.
And within the other art forms...
The hackers movement.
Right. Now, and the musical complement to that was the punk movement. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That was the retrieval of... futile, but a retrieval of the low-tech
human-scale effort of the 60s as a temporary anti-environment to the new hot Baroque mood that was coming in with the mixed corporate media, these giants dying.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So you had junk bonds. Now, the collapse of the Baroque spiral of hot mood media started in 85, 86 with the surface...
collapse of the junk bond bubble, too.
That's right. Well, that really manifested last year, and you had an earlier spasm in October 87. You had the atmosphere that Gorbachev set by going into street situations and talking one-to-one with people.
Mm-hmm.
He had taken the advice from me that the Russian people would never believe the major media. Had a bias and familiarity and trusted slightly Samizdat, all right, the Russian underground. But I told Gorby, if he brings in the human scale figure, mood, atmosphere by the middle 80s, then he will surface as a barometer of our times and be very popular, all right? So the human scale manifested lately by Gorbachev pretending he was willing to resign in January. That's human scale. That's someone that you can have access to and would listen to and would respond to your grievance.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But on the larger corporate media effect, he does have to be president for a larger span of time.
Why does he have to be president? What's the importance of that image?
President is a top-down position.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be part of the solar government to be president. The popular reflection of that is to have come out of the intelligence agencies, which both he and Bush did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, George Bush is playing catch-up ball trying to offer a gentler, kinder nation. That's human scale.
Yeah.
So Bart...
Yeah, he's always one step behind Gorbachev.
Yeah, because he doesn't control the top-down secret pattern access to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what you have... So, Sean, we have the Baroque spiral of a hot retrieval means a collapse...
What?
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought Ken was talking to you, Sean. Certainly the archetype for this human scale retrieval will be the collapse of the Berlin Wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's human scale. So what do you make of that? So what new patterns do you get from that, having never heard it before? Because you're pretty quick on this stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, the fact, okay, that they've claimed that these satellites are being lost, right?
Yeah.
Which, in reference to human scale, retrieved human scale.
Excellent. That's
that
very...
The satellites set up... through the solar government, they bring back human scale.
You hear that, Mike?
They're transmitters.
Excellent. Excellent pattern recognition. You're right.
Right? They're transmitting words. And so when they say, okay...
Hold it, Sean. Just dig what you said. You're saying that the satellite environment is subsumed in a new human scale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's partly why they could tell us it's not important anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
If it works, it's obsolete.
Yeah.
Right? So
yep.
They say, okay, we're losing it, right?
But, they're trying to.
It just means it's human scale again.
Human scale looms large.
Mm-hmm.
We have really arrived at that eighth level of my chart in the book High Weirdness by Mail,
mm-hmm.
with the hidden ground of second comings,
yeah.
right? The masked man and furry lint and the symptoms of retrieval of the human scale.
Mm-hmm.
I think another sign coming out of George Bush of the retrieval of human scale is him announcing at the end of dictators. The reign of the end of dictators. Now, these are speech gestures, speech acts by top-down hot media positions attempting to explain in an interpersonal way what is not the fact in terms of the huge environments we live inside of. Right? I mean, you know, there is no human scale on the intermedia effect that's going on. Okay? For example... With the hot media collapsing and retrieving human scale, they try to become cool. So the hot media of top-down control is now advocating, via the United Nations, eco-fascism and world government.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the hot media are trying to be global like the ground of cool media our way, are always anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, what do the cool media do? They flip in and adopt the atmosphere of hot media by, as was shown in the elections of 1988, becoming violent and aggressive like hot media.
Mm-hmm.
So television became a violent medium on the image level in the engagement with the tribal ritual of elections. All right? So cool media now are putting on, in the face of human scale, are putting on hot media effects, and the hot media are putting on cool effects.
Mm-hmm.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why the world government will be retrieved as an archetype and an agenda for fake action by the hot media, which is what Bush and Gorby recommend and represent.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And remember, the figures are just the appendages of these media archetype actors.
Yeah.
And the hidden blood flow, the main circuit, river of manifestation of the mood and effects of the media archetypal interplays is, do you know what it is? Take a guess. What would be the basic, it's a medium and it's an artifact, but what would represent the thing that holds it together on the metaphor of calling it the river of blood? Okay, time's up. Advertising.
Advertising.
All right. Now, the greatest artifact created today is news.
Mm-hmm.
And news is both good news and bad news.
Mm-hmm.
So good news is advertising. Bad news is journalism.
Mm-hmm.
All right, bad news.
Hasn't art become advertising? Like the sort of avant-garde art scene, isn't that just advertising as well?
Oh, yeah, that's just image retrieval. Now, here, mm-hmm. See, this is the... Now, it's good to say that because you're trying to figure out what we mean by advertising as the blood of this interplay of the media actors. The blood. In other words, you bring up art or any particular specialty, from physics to science to financial work to craft work. Any activity is a mere surface species spume, an appendage of the larger effects of these archetypal environments. So... small reflections like that on the surface of the bloodstream aren't the area of advertising. Advertising is the form of communication between these huge environments.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the mood of advertising, for example, the hard sell of the hot world before 1950 was the dominant mode of advertising. When the cool mood came in the 60s, soft sell happened.
That means that all the image warfare, the Cold War, is just appendages to that mood.
An appendage to advertising.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's not even the serious issue. The whole idea of the Cold War.
Yeah, here's the amazing thing. Advertising advertises advertising.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to meditate on. Advertising advertises advertising.
Mm-hmm.
In other terms, I've said that the computer environment feeds on itself. Mm-hmm. So does advertising.
So that cool mood would... advertise itself.
That's right. It'd be an effect.
It advertises its appendages in itself.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Advertising is an expression of that mood mud.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we retrieve the hot media in the late 70s, early 80s, advertising flipped back to hard sell. Now
is that why the fifth element is mud then?
The what is?
The fifth element is mud.
Well, we could say advertising is the fifth element. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And so what happens, what's happening in advertising? All right, the main beef today is ads becoming rock and rock becoming advertising, right?
Mm-hmm.
We should move on, Bob. We've got other callers. I think you spent a long time on this one.
So, Sean, just if you want to call back again.
Listening.
Yeah, keep listening. But the next topic, what you've led purposely, or perfectly into, not purposely, but maybe unconsciously, is how advertising expresses Hermann Hesse's glass bead game and the forms of... the media actors expressing Finnegan's Wake. So that's another new dialectic. The glass bead game and Finnegan's Wake, the kinetic tradition and the tactile tradition. Much to be said tonight, Mike. Thanks for letting us go over. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Excellent.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks, Sean.
Excellent tail wagging the dog there.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
No, I just, it's running off a little bit, Bob, so I have to play the aggressive co-host. An interesting comment, actually. I was reading something about art movements over the years, and ties in very closely with what Sean said about advertising and art.
Yeah.
And Futurism was one of the very first art movements to use advertising to its benefit. I'll read you a brief paragraph from this publication. The founding and first manifesto of futurism appeared on the front page of Le Figaro, at the time the most influential newspaper in Europe, not because the editor believed futurism to be of any aesthetic value, but because its author, Marinetti, paid for it to appear there as an advertisement. At the time, the futurist movement did not exist, but Marinetti soon created it by financing publications and tours by any artist prepared to label themselves futurist.
That's incredible, Mike. Now, did you just happen to have that around?
Yeah.
Because that is a, again, the artist being the intended of the race, they merge a lot of the factors we just talked about. They put a manifesto on the front page as news, and it was an advertisement at the same time. So good and bad news.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a clever move by Marinetti. Of course, that's why in this period after World War II, we have nothing but retrievals of these things. But they are cliches made new. That's our job. I mean, nothing is new under the sun, but there's nothing old under the sun now. But what you're saying is very appropriate about Marinetti's work.
We should, just before we go on, remind you that the phone number here is 595-1478. My name is Michael Dyer. You're listening to The Church of the Subgenius, a bi-weekly segment here at CKLN. And did you want to introduce our guest?
Yeah, we don't have any calls?
Not at the moment.
Okay.
No.
All right. We have some subgeniuses? Are you willing to take that label?
No.
We have some discarnate. You are discarnate right now. We have the retrievers of Bobcat, right? I mean, Bobcat disguised as an alien with a furry lint cover, right?
Mm-hmm.
Showing up in your area, and you trotted it back to your zone and made it comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But Andrew is also the person responsible for our greatest hits tapes, because he complained that we didn't offer anything. We were too modest. We didn't know that anybody cared. But it was because of what you complained about that we didn't have any gifts or Bob hits to present in fundraising that led to this request being answered. So thank you, Andrew. Andrew, well, you've got something to say, I know, because you often cough in.
Yes. I want to ask you, actually, I called Ivan Stein down in Dallas.
On the radio, or you have his home number?
His home number.
How'd you get his home number?
I got it from the other Bob.
Me?
No, you.
The other Bob, the guy out in the country. Yeah.
And I phoned him. I didn't get to talk to him, because he's always out of the house.
Great.
But I talked to his wife. Very nice lady. And so what I hope to do is to get a tape
of him
and
dealing with me.
I left him as
you want to get him into the dialogue with my claims.
No, it's not that. I just it is the dialogue. That is it. And it's just the direction that I have to go in. I'm called to do this.
Yes, you are, because this other Bob is not too impressed with my work.
Well, he called you. He said, "Well, he's Bob, but he's a little pink around the edges."
Well, see, that's the human scale, Bob. All right, we're no longer polarized in the old pink subgenius dialectic. That's why I'm the biggest pink around. So, I would say this Bob you're referring to is a little too electric autonomous and holding his fort. He's not ready to merge with the pink in himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's maintaining his distance, but I would agree with the assessment of me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but that's what the new Bob is. Bob on human scale has a slight pink aura.
All right.
What do you make of what I just talked about? I'd never said that before. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? It's big talk.
It's big talk.
Yeah.
It's big talk. It's actually, Susan may not like this, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. We got the Neotech.
Oh, you got that stuff?
We got it.
From Colorado or someplace?
Las Vegas.
Okay, yeah. Neotech, that's is that human scale? Is that high-tech human scale?
It is.
Yeah.
That's it. It's
Neotech is something this guy advertises in the mm-hmm. States. You might want to say what it is.
Well, we're not sure yet. We just listened to the first tape. But he makes a couple of neat points that sort of connect to what you said.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is really connecting, because we haven't heard the whole story yet. But what he seems to be saying is that we're all under this big con, right? The conspiracy.
The conspiracy spiral.
And part of it is that we've all become too specialized.
Yeah.
Too fragmented. Right? And our work and our lives have become meaningless.
Okay, now you just take, that's the hidden bias for that is a cool bias. See, he wants to, he's tribally for being tribal. He can't handle the fragmented hot media effect. So he's waking up the cool, amateurish, more generalist, non-specialist archetype at this point, which would come back under human scale traditions. The human scale would emphasize a non-specialism attitude. But that is, if he's advocating his dogma, then he's stuck back in the first rush of that, which was in the 50s and 60s.
Well, he does hearken back to these values. I mean, his whole thing, it seems, from the first tape, 45 minutes of the 9 hours of tape that we have to listen to, is that it all centers around money.
Money is the blood?
Money is the blood. Of the reason why, the reason for which we should be doing things. So people are doing things as an end to themselves instead of for money.
Well, the Exus once told me that our goal is to, or what we should do is make other people wealthy. I think that this guy would agree with that. In other words, if we're concerned about our own goals, we miss the point about making wealth via money. The problem is that money is not a ground anymore. It is a figure. It's a retrieved pastime mythic clothing we put on. Therefore, it is beyond the old moral concerns of money in the days when visual space was the ground. So, yeah, we can make money as a pastime. We certainly would agree with that. And I do that.
Mm-hmm.
I make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I don't use it. But I don't use it in my solar government situation because... I interplay all spaces and their extensions, and money is just an extension of visual space. Now, the reason money came back in the 80s in the hot media Baroque style is that money is close to number and actually has a tactile basis. As a matter of fact, money is called the the filther lucre. It was an old phrase, L-U-C-R-E, the filthy lucre. So it had a feces kind of aspect, which is tactile. You know, get your shit together. That was a tactile phrase in the 60s. So, yeah, money is a form of... that's where the yuppies replayed the hippies with a tactile bias, but with a hot, meaty, baroque spiral. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, go on. These are simple. So far, this guy sounds like an extension of me, you know, a subsidiary effect.
Well, he's a he does sound a little bit.
Did I tell you he sounded exactly like Bob?
Well, he does sound a bit like one of the
hot part of Bob.
Not exactly hot. He's sort of put on Bob.
Oh, is that right?
He's trying to put you on. Put.
Oh, you mean there's a sense of irony in his voice?
It's the pacing.
The pacing?
A little bit of the pacing.
Yeah. It's like a meditation?
It's the tonality.
You're going to have to bring it in. We're going to have to play this.
I think
well,
so.
We should have brought in that first. Yeah. The introduction is just a little...
I'm not sure...
It's just a little bit like... Well...
No, but you look like Dave Bernard, you know, slightly.
Yeah?
Yeah, our program director.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dave, if you're listening, I'm looking at your face now. Human scale.
Lucky man.